Welcome to Trep Talks. My name is Sushant. I am an e-commerce entrepreneur, and each week we bring an inspiring entrepreneur or business person from e-commerce, retail, or tech industries to help you discover how to start and grow your own e-commerce business. Thanks for spending some time with me today, and let's get started.
Hey there, entrepreneurs. My name is Sushant, and welcome to Trep Talks. This is the show where I interview successful e-commerce entrepreneurs, business executives, and thought leaders, and ask them questions about their business story, and also dive deep into some of the strategies and tactics that they have used to start and grow their businesses. And today, I'm really excited to welcome Nasir Silvani to the show. Nasir is the co-founder of Cali Connected. Cali Connected is an online marketplace for smoking accessories. And today I'm going to ask Nasir a few questions about his entrepreneurial journey and some of the strategies and tactics that he has used to start and grow his business. So thank you so much for joining me today at Trep Talks, Nasir.
Of course, thank you.
So very, very interested in learning more about your business. I did read that you went through a little bit of a journey even before starting this. I mean, I think you were trying to figure out different business ideas along with your friend. Can you share a little bit about, you know, your backstory? How did you want to get into entrepreneurship and some of the ideas that you explored before starting Cali Connected?
Absolutely. So mainly my backstory, I have a business degree out of college, and then both of my jobs before I ended up coming full-time at Cali Connected before this were in management and retail. So very always business oriented, and I always had the mindset of running my own business and pursuing something like that, even if it was something like real estate. So that's essentially where we started. My friend and I, we were friends in college. He ended up being my partner at Cali Connected and the other co-founder here. We basically just decided we're going to pick a relatively cheap city, a poorer city, try to put about $20,000 together and launch a real estate company, flipping basically foreclosures at auction from the government. We sat in constant courthouse and everything like that, and just decided that's not the route we're going to go. So we started to pursue other ideas. And this is, I guess, more so the interesting part. We really wanted to get into vending before getting into anything with e-commerce. Vending was mainly, we saw opportunities in various sectors, various industries. There's advancements in food. Wherever you saw there was vending, was just growing automation. So we started to do a deep dive there. My business partner is actually a full-time EMT lifeguard on the beach in Florida at the time. So he came up with the idea with all, like, why don't we pursue vending sunscreen? Like, you go up and down the beaches and there's just like, there's shops that sell it. But at the end of the day, we're just all constantly buying these bottles of sunscreen, taking it to the same exact place for use. And there's not like one centralized place just to host it. Also, you could bring public sector investments and have all the money go back to that public beach or anything like that. And you also end up with a cleaner environment with no bottles. So we started just to go down the rabbit hole with that and ended up founding a gentleman who had a patent that basically protects anything that dispenses sunscreen. Jumped on a call with him and we went down the rabbit hole there, finding out that like it's not really investable because of basically him holding the patent and someone else trying to challenge him. So we thought what our great idea ended up once again just going down the wayside. We decided to go back to the drawing board and decide what to do. And that's when we came across there's a Shopify exchange platform where you can buy starter stores, or if someone just wants to get rid of an established store, you can sell it through them. We just started looking there weeks on end, and we came across Cali Connected. Cali Connected at the time was an online smoke shop like ours out of the UK, but only had 5 products, very minimal branding. Was basically all we were buying was a URL. So once we saw that, we decided to explore this space before contacting him, like what distributors are out there, how much money do you think we're going to have to put into this to get it even started, et cetera. And we liked what we saw. We saw the opportunity there, and we basically reached out and we ended up purchasing it relatively cheap investment that we got the URL for. And then from there, it was just months on end of rebranding, linking with basically distributors, doing what we can to get the website up.
So a couple of follow-up questions to that. I guess my first question would be, So you were not, you were looking at a different business idea. You were not really into the whole, you know, marijuana or, you know, this industry. Was there an education process for you, or like you were already familiar with the industry and, you know, this was one of those ideas that you saw, okay, maybe there is a potential, and, or did the idea really come from the, you know, while browsing through the Shopify exchange and you're looking at the URL and website?
So I think in general, after the vending went down the wayside, we had a grasp and a feel to go after e-commerce. I had done some basically work with e-commerce and different channels in my previous job. So I felt like this is something we could go after. And definitely we have a lot to learn, but we have a good starting point. So it's more so that we were going after what can we do in the e-commerce space. Let's try to find something where, hey, maybe that industry catches our eye. And then from there, if it does, if we are interested, go after it. So I wouldn't say initially, yes, we were 100% dead set on the cannabis industry. It was more so on, let's see what we could do in the e-commerce space. Once we found this opportunity, we looked into it further and we said, absolutely, this is something we want to go after.
And the reason you went after a Shopify exchange store rather than just creating your own Shopify store is because this one had some traffic related to the keywords in the cannabis industry. Was that the main reason?
We were hoping that would be the case. We had some idea of how SEO worked, but very minimal. And we figured like, all right, so he's got very minimal products. Hopefully he's got some traction going, anything like that. But it was not the case. At the end of the day, essentially, we really bought the URL. I mean, the sitemap wasn't set up. Nothing was crawling properly. Like it was minimal products. So it's not going to get too much traction to like a different competitor that's got thousands of products or anything like that. So it wasn't really that brought us that. The one thing that we did get, and in a positive sense, when looking at like basically technical aspects of the website or what we bought, would be the longevity of the URL. That URL itself was around and got transferred to us. So you do get some SEO credit for that.
Okay. And I mean, anyone else, any other entrepreneur who's trying to go through this, right, you know, going to a Shopify exchange and looking for different businesses and things like that, like what advice would you give them in terms of doing the due diligence so that, like, you know, maybe they're thinking that they're buying like a huge traffic or something, but is there like, would you suggest any due diligence that someone should do before purchasing through Shopify Exchange?
Absolutely. And Shopify Exchange does a great job of basically, if you're going to sell on Shopify Exchange, you allow Shopify Exchange themselves to display your analytics. So one, what they're displaying to you traffic-wise, revenue-wise, everything when you're at that point of purchase is accurate. It's not being posted by the seller. So you do have a guarantee there from Shopify itself on the data that you're seeing, but you do want to do a deeper dive. I mean, if you do have obviously marketing reach in an industry, someone could plumb like skyrocket those numbers for a few months and make that what you're seeing look amazing, but it's really not. So we always just like to say the general stuff you could do looking at SEO wise, whether it's Google Analytics or looking at the free like domain authority searches or going deeper dive onto like a Moz or a Dib is always good just to see beyond the traffic, where are they ranking for keywords? Are they even ranking well for the keywords they need to? If it's something that's tied to a brick and mortar location, how is it there's local traffic looking for that? So that you could essentially go back to them with rebuttals they probably don't even know and even negotiate that further. So we always say just try to like go further than the traffic numbers and what's presented to you. There's a lot of free tools out there that you could get all this data from.
And the website, your website, Cali Connected, how do you describe it? I believe it's not just an e-commerce store, it's a marketplace. What is your business model? Is it really that you're inviting sellers to sell and then what you're bringing, the value that you're adding is really your marketing and the traffic that you've created?
Absolutely. So when we started, we thought we were going to be able to basically bootstrap this whole thing, get to a point where we could get some investors and have our giant massive warehouse and we're shipping everything. We quickly found out that was not going to be the case. banks want nothing to do with our industry. You have to find other type of investors. There are, you can find investors for sure. And there's even some banks outside of like a typical bank that would deal with you. But the main way people go is just to find private investors. If they have interest in the company, you could get some sort of money that way. But it basically gave us the green light to say, if you want to advance this to one of the top three where they have thousands of products and everything like that, you have to create some sort of marketplace aspect of it. So we reached out to basically distributors at this point. We were, this is probably like 2-3 years ago, basically that we were already buying wholesale from, and asked them in a manual aspect, would you be willing, since we have a great relationship, to start allowing us to drop ship some of your products? So we would list it on our site. We'll push through an order as if it's coming through one of your retail channels, and you guys just push it out as if it's coming from there. Those relationships flourished, and what ended up happening is we realized that we can grow this even bigger, and you're really not taking a risk on your bottom line inventory wise if you're able to do this successfully. So what we started to do is we found in our space that many people were willing to do this for many reasons, whether it's a smaller company, a larger distributor, whatever it was. But we wanted to present it in a way that was better than our competitors. There's a lot of dropship platforms out there that you could pay into, or there's some that have been built by our competitors. And that's how they approach these distributors to get their inventory for dropshipping, to get it on their site. And we spent months, this was in the middle of last year, getting this all built up. And we ended up partnering with a system called Duoplane. And what that allowed us to do is to approach many more manufacturers, many more distributors. We're now at over 24 distributors and manufacturers on our site beyond our own inventory to allow them to list on our site. And everything's fully automated. It removes customer service issues. It's been a great and nice, clean process. So yes, it's turned into a marketplace. Was that the initial plan? No, but that's where we saw we needed to go if we were going to accelerate growth in any way, because unfortunately, you can't approach a bank with a great idea in our industry and get funding.
So in terms of the technology that you mentioned, is it, can you share a little bit more about how that works? Does it connect with your distributor or manufacturer and pulls in the inventory directly from there, so that, you know, you're not worried about if somebody buys from you and they may not have the inventory, and then vice versa, if someone makes a purchase, it automatically transfers the order to them? Or how exactly does the mechanic of your ordering? And
yeah, so you hit the nail on the head. Obviously, it gets far more technical with everyone having different back-end ERP systems, they're having different front-end shopping carts, but the main reason why we wanted to partner with Duoplane is that we saw it being cost effective to be able to meet as many customization aspects as possible. We've linked with distributors who have a full customized backend system built on NetSuite from scratch. We are linked to other small companies that just use Shopify and the Shopify inventory aspect of that. So it literally can be customized in any way possible. And what we're doing is, we're not just staying there. So that was like the where we wanted to start. We didn't want to bring a developer on and customize it. We saw this as a great product, and we thought we know we can build off of it. So going forward, we just signed contracts to basically create a public Shopify sourcing app for other stores. So if you own a startup in our space and you want to list our inventory, there's only 2 public Shopify apps currently. They don't function too well. You can go search them yourself. There's a bunch of private apps through the bigger retailers, but we really want to try to go into that public space, dominate it, and do it right. And that's where we're headed. So yeah, Duoplane is what's running us right now, and it works exactly as you described it, without getting too technical into like what exactly it can do with which connectors. But what we're going to do is build off of it. And the front end system that we're building now is going to be fully proprietary to us.
And the value proposition for your store really is the selection, right? So what you're bringing to the consumer of this product is really the wide selection and choice and design and these kind of things. Is that an accurate statement?
Absolutely. As soon as we switched the whole vision of going towards the marketplace, that's exactly where the brand vision went, is bring every possible product aspect in this industry to the customer's eyes in one place, whether it's CBD, whether it's housing stuff, whether it's actual glass pipes or vaporizers. any other collection that ends up growing as the industry is growing, we're definitely going to do whatever we can to get it on the website and find whatever vendors we can. So we're also like super strict with how we are with our suppliers and everything. So like we want to keep the shopping experience nice and basically what they've experienced with shopping with us. So there are a lot of supplier restrictions, supplier contracts and everything that go into place to like prevent issues from happening with us getting too big with too many vendors. But at the end of the day, that's where we see the growth and what the customer wants, as much products as possible in this space in one site.
And I feel your website definitely has some, you know, great reviews, but I would have thought that with this business model, there's a bit of a risk because at the end of the day, fulfillment is dependent on the supplier, your manufacturer, distributor. And if they don't do it properly, basically the customer is at the end of the day going to come to your store and leave a negative review. How do you, in this kind of a business model, how do you manage that? How do you make sure that the supplier is actually fulfilling on time and doing their part of the deal?
Absolutely. So the main thing starts with, like I said, the preliminary stuff that's always cut and dry is just the contractor agreements. We set preliminary standards on what they need to do. So if you're on our site, we're fully transparent as to where it's shipping from. If it's shipping from Cali Connected, it has a tag just like Amazon ships from Cali Connected. If it's shipping from a manufacturer or distributor like Prism Pipes, let's say their pieces are on our site, it'll say it ships from Prism Pipes. And what that also shows below it is their average fulfillment time. That data is coming directly from Duoplane. If they're now taking 3, 4, 5 days, that's publicly facing to the customer. So if a customer goes in to purchase that, they know fulfilled on average within 5 days. We've given them fair warning. Obviously, it's going to be a not so great experience if they haven't caught that, or even if they did catch it. No one wants to wait that long. So what we do is we set thresholds. If it goes to 3, not only are they getting warning messages all the time as it goes past the promised fulfillment times, but like that's when we start saying, like, should we drop this vendor? Should we consider something else? How much volume can we actually send them? Should we remove express shipping options from those products? There's a lot of different ways where we can create a great shopping experience, keep our suppliers on board and on brand, and still produce what we're trying to do with not having that control that is necessary. Like you said, it's why Amazon created their own, you bring your products to us and we'll ship them for you, because they knew that this was going to become a problem. Well, we feel like there's a way to go after it as long as you're like blunt and cut and dry from the beginning, and you stick to these restrictions and these rules that they have to follow. It's been working so far, and we think we can grow it.
What kind of competition exists in the market for these kind of products? I'm assuming, because cannabis is becoming more and more legal in more places, I'm assuming there's a lot of competition, because a lot of these products are probably manufactured in, you know, Chinese companies, you know, factories and so forth, and you know, anybody can really go out, you know, and how do you make sure that you have your share of wallet?
Yeah, no. So I think the main thing when it comes to like actual manufacturing and not just reselling, we haven't dove too much into it. We've created a few cleaning products, and then we've done the typical unbranded, like cheaper entry level products that you would find at any basically retailer. If you go into a Target, you find Target branded napkins at the cheapest price point. That's what we did. We brought in unbranded glass, and if that's what you're shopping for, it's available on the marketplace. If you want to go to a branded item, it's a little more costly. So we've done that aspect when it comes to manufacturing. And that just like basically just like stabilizes us, our bottom line, and just like increases our branding in a sense, so we can say. But when it comes to like the brand itself, Cali Connected as a retailer, how we're doing against competitors, how we can continue to gain market share and basically also retain market share, because it can be easy to get into this market if you're willing to fight the risks and barriers that are in there. I think the main thing has been what we've said from the beginning. It's so cliche, but if you're so customer focused, I don't care what industry you're in, it's going to work. You see success stories in dog food, you go read the Chewy story. You see it in shoes, go read about Zappos. You see it everywhere. Amazon itself, all his preliminary thoughts were all about being so customer focused that that was the main reason why we said, let's go for this industry. Because when we found this website, we started Googling all our competitors. A lot of them didn't even have a phone number up. If they had a phone number up, it would go to voicemail. If you tried to chat, it was an automated chat that you'd get an email later. We saw customer service as a huge opportunity as being so simple that we could just come in and spearhead this. And yeah, someone else could come in and try to compete and do it better than us. But I think that we are the first that are getting to that middle grade area of growth that has been so focused on that. And I think if we retain that, which my business partner and I are focused on, it should just keep growing from here.
Now, I know you were mentioning before that, you know, initially when you were trying to get funding for the business, the banks were hesitant on working on, you know, the idea with you. Can you share a little bit about, you know, is cannabis industry still, because I mean, at the end of the day, to me, it seems like your business is really a product business. It's not necessarily a cannabis business. It's really a, you know, accessory business. What is the hesitancy from you know, these banks or financial institutions, even I'm assuming payment providers and so forth? Why are they hesitant on working and, you know, with cannabis industry products? Is that still the case? And, you know, what are some of the challenges of
starting? Sure. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's such a gray area from top to bottom. I mean, outside of my industry, we don't deal with the plant at all. So if you go into cannabis itself, it's weird how you can process debit card payments through all these banks and everything like that, but they won't allow the credit card processing. Come down into our space, all of us, including ourselves, you can get a business credit card from any of these banks. They're willing to issue out credit cards, start to build your credit up, but good luck getting a loan from any of them. So it's just like they're sort of one step in, one step out in every aspect themselves, because like you said, we can present it and our lawyers can present it into a way where it's like, these are tobacco products only. We abide by other tobacco product laws. We have other tobacco product licenses in all these states. That's how the states want to tax us. That's what we do. That's what we pay. So that means that's what we sell. You go into another lawyer's office and then they start arguing that we're selling direct cannabis vapes and all this stuff. And it's a whole different terminology. So I think it's the sense that since there's so much gray area, since there's in our country overlap between federal and state laws, that the banks are just themselves, like I keep saying, one step in, one step out, that's why you run into the hesitations. Do I think maybe a bigger, like a Green Lane or a High Tide Inc., the two publicly traded, have been able to maybe get some funding? I'm sure they probably have a smaller bank that they've succeeded with and shown the longevity of proof of all their revenue. But at the end of the day, it's at our size, smaller, even bigger than us. It's just not really possible right now.
In terms of working with payment processors, what has been your experience? Which, you know, for a more, I guess, you know, this gray area or more of a risky business, which payment providers have been more willing to work with you, and is there an additional cost for these kind of more, you know, high risk prone products and businesses?
Yeah, so you really don't find too many big name payment processors. Even like I said, the local banks, like if you happen to have a bank at a TD, let's say a business account, they won't process your payments. They'll hold a checking account for you. It's like stuff like that that you run into when the bigger names. So you do find a lot of people are willing to process. There's some even domestic options at smaller banks. Basically, the processor uses smaller domestic banks. There are overseas options, which are lesser rates, but you need much, much higher volume. And then you also run into the risk of where's that money going. But the domestic options, I mean, you said it accurately. You definitely run into a way higher fee than other industries. Any high risk industry, they ding us on processing, even as your volume is growing and you're getting to a point where it's like you're giving them significant volume each month. They're still, the processing fees are hefty, especially for us in our, basically the bigger accessory vendors in our space, what they've done is added CBD like we did. As soon as we did that, even though there was a national hemp bill that was passed into law that allowed the CBD to be traded across all state lines federally, everything like that, they still use that as a reason to charge us more. Or you want to be processing CBD, it's this much percentage higher. So yeah, you do get dinged a bit, unfortunately, with dealing with our products.
And so your business is really about marketing, right? The way you are driving revenues is kind of in control, in your control, but it really depends on how much traffic and how much how many people you can drive to your site. Can you share a little bit about, you know, what are some of your main customer acquisition channels? And is this, I'm assuming that this business, is this more of a repeat purchase kind of a business where, you know, once you've acquired the customer, you can bring them back again and again and have them purchase multiple times?
Absolutely. So I think to start off with the first part in the sense of basically how we're marketing everything. Yes, it's 100. Marketing is 100% because, like you said, we have no traffic. There's nothing. It's our number one sales channel, CaliConnected.com. We are growing other channels, which we can dive into. But at the end of the day, that's our bread and butter. If there's no traffic there, there's no revenue. So when it comes to marketing, though, it gets a little bit misconstrued in our industry because we can't go to Facebook and run $10,000 worth of ads. We can't go to Instagram and say, here's 100 grand for this quarter. Go do what we can. No social media will take us, no paid ads on search. You can't do search either, Google ads, anything like that. So it mainly comes down to what you can do yourself and what you can do in these like ancillary smaller channels. So there are like, obviously, like there's the WeTube, which is like a YouTube of cannabis videos out there. You can do stuff like that. But mainly what we do is when we realized this, we became so SEO focused that we realized you have to just gain as much share as you can in the search space, because if you do the analytical work and see where the top three, less than 1% of their traffic's coming from paid ads. So it's all a search. You got to win here or you're not going to win at all in my space. So we started to become so SEO focused to do what we can there. And that's our main marketing initiative. Beyond that, we run our own affiliate marketing platform. So we have over 50 affiliates. This can be from websites that look like Groupon in our industry. We're just offering coupons and then we issue them now a percentage to influencers on social media getting paid out a percentage. So that's how we go beyond SEO and do what we can to grow ourselves.
That's very interesting. So you can't even make organic posts on Instagram or any other social channel like TikTok?
No, they've kicked us almost all. We've been kicked off of Instagram twice. We've been out of huge petition. We were a part of a huge petition with the YouTube with the WeTube, where it has now over like 80,000 signatures to just try to get a conversation around parameters as to why these accounts are getting kicked off. And even one of the biggest in the space, Dankstop, had over 300,000 followers. That was one of our biggest appeals every time they kicked us off, is that you're keeping the biggest guys in our space who are posting the same exact things. They finally got kicked off this month. So it's like, right now they're very anti our industry. They tie us directly to cannabis. We did everything possible, did not include a word or a reference that looks like the plant. Everything was pieces without any plants, descriptions, captions, hashtags, none of that had it. We age restricted our Instagram page to do it 21 and over, still got taken off. The second time was over 11,000 followers. So it's just like, it happened. We just can't, unfortunately, go there. I don't know why. Maybe one day in the future, but that's just the way they're treating us right now.
Do you know who your target buyer is? Like, do you know, is this mostly a certain age range, you know, male, female? My assumption is that, I mean, this industry probably, like, whoever uses these products, cannabis-related products, are probably quite passionate about it. So, I mean, one way, if no social media platforms allow you to market, could be probably be to build a community, I suppose. Not necessarily to sell the product, but building a community around just the lifestyle, I guess. Have you ever thought of something like that?
Oh, for sure. And if you talk to my business partner about the biggest opportunity here, it's that exactly. We've seen other brands, even small things like create a Discord around a gaming community, a virtual community, just to meet there. You go as big to a Puffco, who makes the biggest e-rigs or vapes on the market right now. they run like PuffCon and have like a festival where they get the community together and everything like that. That's definitely the way to go. Have we done it yet and done it successfully? Absolutely not. We need to definitely start focusing on that. And that's like, you hit the nail on the head of like things, opportunities that we've written down here that are like a huge focus of ours. And that's something that we should and absolutely have to go to, because like you said, there's no way to go to the social sites. There's no way to go to search. So that's like how you have to go. And you want to retain these customers. Going back, I forgot to answer that part of your last question about basically, is this a reoccurring customer base or anything like that? Surprisingly, it's not. So we see that our customers come back a lot to purchase. It's, you get about 1.5 purchases from a customer every 2 years. So what we find is we're a very wants-based industry. We're not needs-based. So if you hit a harder economy, we had a successful economy, let's say, going through the rut of the COVID spur because people had some extra money. They were stuck at home, couldn't vacation, everything like that. So it shot up because they had this ancillary money to spend. You bring down a tighter economy like we're looking at now. At the end of the day, if you're going to consume cannabis, you can go down to a bodega, buy a pack of paper for $1, and you have 30 sessions right there. So why would I spend $100 on a glass bong? That's what we started to realize our customers' mindset is into seeing a great period and a slower period, a turndown that you might see in an economy. But you still see them coming back to the site. They like to see the products. They like our emails. We have huge click-through rates on our email subscribers. So like, it's an active customer base, but on the purchasing aspect, it's not as many would perceive.
In terms of like the buyer, could you think about like some other sister company or brand that is not, that's kind of like, I don't know what the right word is, but it's not, it's kind of a, a different category, not necessarily cannabis, but you know that any cannabis, most cannabis users would be using those products. So maybe utilize your, you know, customer base if they're not buying it here, you know, this product to promote a different product or a different thing. Category.
Absolutely. We haven't been able to focus in like on a specific collection or product yet, but we can definitely tell the trends in basically, to put it generically, in the urban space. So if you go to like out here, I don't know if they have them up in Canada, we have a retailer called Urban Outfitters. It's very like trendy, skateboardy clothes. You can find a Puffco Peak or an Auto Grinder on their website. So they're starting to like trickle in some of our products because they know our customer base is there. Those are the same trends that we've been seeing. How we can pursue and enter that space, we haven't gotten there yet, but we're definitely starting to trend some of these, basically, well, like you said, cross references of industry bases where you can possibly take some customer base easily if you can find these connections.
What does your team look like right now? I know you mentioned you have another co-founder, but who else is in your team?
For sure. So we have two full-time employees below them. So we have our main warehouse out in California, which is run by a third-party logistics company. We don't have a warehouse employee or like employee like that. Where the two employees work, there is a small return center there. So like they do see some products that come back and everything like that. Beyond them, we have five contractors. So it's like lawyers, graphic designers, bookkeeper, accounting, web developer, everything like that just goes into that bunch of contractors where we're using them on a contractor basis. But yeah, besides myself and my business partner, there's two full-time employees at Cali Connected.
So you started this business, I believe, in 2018. And, you know, the goal was because you were interested in entrepreneurship. Looking back, do you think that you entered the right business or the right category? How do you see this business at this stage? Do you want to continue working on this because you're kind of invested in it? Or do you ever think that, you know, maybe this was not the right category to get into? You know, maybe I should have tried something else, or, you know, this is kind of like a learning experience and maybe there's some sort of an exit strategy and you want to pursue something different. Like, are you, looking back, do you think that you are fulfilled as an entrepreneur doing what you're doing right now?
I would say yes and no. I definitely when I started with the mindset of entrepreneurship, and even when going back into like being focused on real estate at first, we always went with the mindset that we're not going to fall in love with any investment, whether it's me and my business partner talking or myself talking with my wife, whatever it was. I've never, if I wanted to be successful with, from what I was reading, is you got to be willing to exit and continue on to the next project. So with that mindset, I was thrilled to take this on. Was there some hesitations with the industry? Absolutely. I mean, when we first started this, it was just like a side hustle investment between my business partner and I. We both had full-time jobs. I didn't even post this on LinkedIn or anything yet because I thought, if my boss sees I'm selling bongs online, what's he going to think? Like, there goes my full-time job. Maybe, I don't know. That was just like my hesitations. So yeah, there was some hesitations at first, but I love what we do. I think we're doing ethically and appropriately right what we need to be doing when it comes to age verifications and everything like that. So I feel like confident and love with the brand that we built that I don't have any hesitations being in this space now. Do I want to exit and see Cali Connected being sold at one day? For sure. That's the plan from day one. We want to build this to something where it's hopefully a juggernaut and we get some big time offer and then on to the next one. Whether it's in this industry or not, that I don't think I've ever been so focused on that it really would bother me or say that I'm hesitant that we invested in this space.
Now, in every entrepreneur's journey, there's always mistakes made, failures, lessons learned. Can you maybe think about, you know, throughout your journey of building this business, what have been your, you know, one or two big mistakes or failures, and what have you learned from them? What advice can you give to an entrepreneur just starting out in their journey as a lesson learned?
For sure. I mean, the lesson itself might sound cliche when I say it's really don't ever give up, but I want to be more focused on my industry. What we really learned was in that sense that don't ever give up, because at the beginning, we just were hitting wall after wall after wall. So we built Shopify. Okay, we didn't realize we needed a whole separate payment processor because Shopify does not want to process payments for our products. So you go live the next second day, you're down. The website's up, but there's no cart to check out on. So go after that, try to be down for a few weeks, figure that out. Then going down the road, there's age verification laws, vape restriction laws, tobacco laws that are unraveling right in front of our eyes. And it's like, should we give up? Should we pay these lawyers thousands of dollars to tell us basically you're going to have to shut down, like all this stuff? And we just kept figuring out different ways to figure it out and get the information we needed and work through it, whether we have to cut back sometimes. Whatever you have to do, you just have to get through it. Because at the end of the day, if you do figure it out, it's just going to lead to more success. If you are just to give up at that point, that's where you end, you know? So I think it's really, I hate to say it, but just truly don't give up. If it's something you think it's going to succeed, there's a way around whatever issue you're running into at that one point.
Awesome. So now I'm going to move on to our next segment called Rapid Fire. By the way, I know you gave me a great lesson, but could you share maybe one big failure or big mistake that was almost like, you know, why did I make this mistake? Or, you know, even sometimes it's not in your control, was a big failure and, you know, you had to, you know, redo something.
For sure. I think it's more so like a I would say a lesson learned, because I feel like we'd probably take this risk of going back again, but it's just something to expect that could possibly happen. When we were a few years back before we started going after the marketplace aspect this way, there is a public facing marketplace app, like I told you, I think it's called Smoke Drop on the Shopify App Store right now, that we're basically trying to build their competitor. We were on there as a supplier. So another website could order products. It was actually us shipping it. And what happened was we thought this like website had done their like the app had done their due diligence and everything. It was pretty early on. For some reason, like a number of orders went out, a significant amount, like a few thousand dollars worth of orders went out. and they were actually not paid for by that retailer. And like, however the app was communicated, I forget what exactly happened, but we basically ended up being out that money. And the issue at that point became is, do you stay on the platform and basically just be out the money and continue to sell and like tell them to figure their stuff out and hope they do, or do you get off? And yeah, we could have stayed on and brought on a lot of revenue. We cut it out immediately. We just said this was like not the way to do business, not people we want to be dealing with. And we lost all that revenue. We lost that channel of sales, and we didn't have anything close to that for like 6 months to a year before we started building our marketplace. But at the same token, we just felt like if that's how we were going to be dealt with at that one point, like just cut it off now and try to do what you can and grow from there rather than trying to like deal with it and hopefully it gets fixed. So there's just points where you feel like you're so invested that you can't really back out, or you shouldn't back out. And sometimes it really is the best decision. And looking back, I think it really was, because to see where our own marketplace is at now, rather than being on someone else's marketplace, is incredible. And if I would not have had that decision to make right there, and us, my business partner and I, backing out, that this would probably not be where we're at.
By the way, what do you think about crypto? Have you, I'm assuming you're not accepting cryptocurrencies on your business?
We do accept crypto.
Oh, you do accept. Okay, cool. And do you see a lot of uptake on that? Like, are there a lot of people using crypto as a payment method?
Surprisingly, no. To check out, there's really not too much being used right now. In the like huge sways, we see people use it more. Like, they'll get frustrated that they're now down XYZ amount across their portfolio. So I feel like they're just like, screw it, let me get rid of some. And the other way too, when they see huge swings the other way, we, in the news, we see people using it a bit more. But for the most part, no. Most of our processing comes through credit card processing, and then the next big chunk, which really is not that much, it's still under 10%, is the our buy now, pay later vendor, Viabil. So yeah, okay. Crypto is very small.
So now I'm going to move on to our rapid fire round. And in this round, I'm going to ask you a few quick questions, and you have to answer them maybe in one or two words or one sentence or so. So the first one is, one book recommendation that you would make to entrepreneurs and business professionals, and why?
I always like to recommend Profit First by Mike Mihalowicz, mainly just how to run a lean company. It just applied to us very well from the beginning, so it's always stuck with me.
An innovative product or idea in the current e-commerce, retail, or tech landscape that you feel excited about?
Being like VR and AR, how that space is going to enter basically any sort of physical aspect of the retail space, whether you're selling ancillary vapes and glass pipes like us, or a couch or anything like that. Like, yeah, we're seeing it fit into your room. Where's that going to go? I think that's going to be very interesting to see how much we can do with that beyond what's capable right now.
A business or a productivity tool or software that you would recommend, or a productivity tip?
I think I'd probably go back to Duoplane, just because of how much it helped us right now, just to establish the marketplace aspect. So if that's something you're trying to do, develop a marketplace aspect in your back end, and you're not going to develop, customize it yourself, there are a few options out there, but I would probably recommend Duoplane.
A startup or business in e-commerce, retail, or tech that you think is currently doing great things?
I would probably say Shopify, just because without that, I know there's other big commerce and everything like that stuff that you could build websites on, but without them, I don't think Cali Connected would look or be where we're at right now. And also just in general, what it's been able to do to bring competition to Amazon. Amazon has crossed industry lines everywhere. So anybody that tries to compete with them or gives them a good stab at it, I'm always interested. So for them to give small people like us an opportunity to be a seller, be a website, they're now also like linking all of them to create a whole basic e-commerce of sellers on their shop app. And they're also getting into fulfillment. I like what they're doing, and very just interested to see where it goes from here.
I think all these companies that start up as like a innovative startup company and start growing, but at a certain point they become so big and their hands and legs are in so many different things. It almost, I think, you know, start becoming scary.
Oh yeah, antitrust has gone out the door.
A peer entrepreneur or business person whom you look up to, or someone who inspires you.
I would probably say Gary Vee. I just, even if you don't like his antics and how loud he is, I just love that you can never underestimate the hustle. If you work hard, something good's gonna come out of it, and that's his main driver. So I always just like anything he has to say.
Cool. Final question: best business advice you ever received, or you would give to other entrepreneurs?
I think that I would give is probably going back to like that last question with the whole thing about never giving up. There are so many aspects where we could have said, oh, this is a high risk industry. Oh, this bank said no. Oh, this payment processor shut us down. This, like, and it's just keep going at it. If you think you're passionate about it and you think you're confident it could go somewhere, working hard at it will get you somewhere. So I just always say, don't give up.
Well, thank you, Nasir. Those were all the questions that I had today. Thank you again for sharing your story, for joining me today at Trip Talks, for sharing, you know, how you started your business, all the challenges, how you grew your business, and your future vision. So if somebody wants to purchase products from your business or wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way?
For our products, obviously directly through our website on CaliConnected.com. And if you wanted to get in contact directly with me or my team, obviously there's a generic email at info@CaliConnected.com, or I myself can be reached through my email that it's listed on the website, or also through my LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thank you again, Nasir. Really, really appreciate your time today. And thank you for joining me today at Trip Talks.
Likewise. Thank you.